I had like millions of kroners in debt. I was going to be declared bankrupt if I didn't do anything. And if I would just get a job, it would take me such a long time to pay off these debts. And I wasn't looking forward to a nice life somehow.
Hey, Viking Entrepreneur, I'm Siggy, and you're listening to the Viking Entrepreneurs Podcast, where you get the inside stories on how successful entrepreneurs went from struggling with their business idea to getting paying customers and becoming a huge success. If you want to get more in-depth knowledge on how to take the idea in your head to a successful business, then check out our website at vikingentrepreneurs.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey there, Viking Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Siggy. So I decided to do something different in this week's episode. And I'm sitting in the great meeting hall of Valhalla in Asgard, chatting about sexy programmers and beautiful apps with a god that is most notorious for his brutal hammer and bolts of lightning that will smite any foe who dares challenge him in a battle of wits. Yes, you heard me correctly. This is the Viking Entrepreneurs Podcast, where we sometimes get to travel to the home in the stars and hear from the gods themselves. But before I tell you who the guest is, I want to remind you guys to subscribe to our show on iTunes and Stitcher and give us that lovely 5-star rating. I promise you that you'll instantly get 2 points in handsomeness after giving us your 5-star rating. You can find all the links and show notes for this week's episode on vikingentrepreneurs.com/4. Now, my guest this week went on an incredible journey to create a software startup that soon became moments away from bankruptcy, so he decided to risk it all on a trip to Silicon Valley. Thor Fredriksson is the CEO and founder of Plain Vanilla Games, who created the fastest growing iPhone app game, in history, QuizUp. So Thor, what's up?
Hey man, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great.
Yeah, I can see that.
I hope the intro was to your liking.
Yeah. It's very enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, I'm just great. Thanks for coming here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in knowing, tell us a little bit, just brief history of yourself. Why did you come here to this point?
That's a good question. It's often easy to look back in retrospect and try to put everything together and understand why things happen the way they do. But it's very hard when things haven't still happened. So it might be easy for me now to try and understand how things came about, but 2 years ago I couldn't really foresee what would happen. And I guess that's the case most of the time.
Yeah.
So my history, I didn't really know what to do. I had no idea that I wanted to create QuizUp or even create a software startup a couple of years ago. I was always a bit, excited about the whole startup concept, to create some sort of value out of nothing, to create a company. So I guess when I finished my business degree in University of Reykjavik, I was instantly attracted to starting up new businesses. And this is way back. I think I graduated from Reykjavik University in 2004, so 10 years ago. So at that point, I started doing some startups here in Iceland. I was a co-founder of a startup called Hive, which was a broadband ISP here in Iceland. And it actually did pretty well. We were competing against the big incumbents, the big telecommunication companies here in Iceland. We were offering faster download speeds and more downloads than the competition. And it actually went and became a pretty successful company.
Yeah, I remember that.
Hive, yeah. We were able to be like quite aggressive in our marketing. It's always fun to be the small guy against the big giants who nobody likes.
Yeah, it's kind of like a speedboat versus, an oil tanker.
Absolutely. So that was a lot of fun. And I spent about 3 years there building up Hive. But then Hive got acquired and I decided that I really wanted to kind of expand on. Well, basically what I found out when I was doing Hive is that if you create a local company, like Hyvis, it's very local. You know, we're just serving the greater Reykjavik market, for example. And there's not really big, you know, possibilities to expand Hive because it's based on a very local market. But I felt this need to and desire to create a company that was more global. And this has become, you know, less and less difficult in the recent years, mostly because of technological advancements. So what I did at that point is that I decided to further my studies and do an MBA. So I moved to UK, where I lived for a while, and I did my MBA at Oxford University. That was a great time. You know, I got a big exposure to the world, so to speak, and I got very inspired by world-class teachers and fellow students. And when I got back from Oxford, I was determined to create a company that was global. That was kind of the only real requirement that I had in my mind. And I have no software engineering background, so doing like an app company wasn't really like the first thing I thought of. I was just looking at the market. But what had happened at that time is that with the introduction of iPhones and iPads, is that the distribution system for software had greatly changed. So back in the days, if you wanted to become a game developer, you had to create a game, and that was fit in itself. But then the main problem was distribution. If you wanted to sell your game in the US or in other markets, you had to make a distribution deal. The game had to be like, you know, printed on a CD and packaged, and it was a lot of start costs to actually distributing a software title. Yeah. But what had changed with mobile, especially, is that the distribution process was becoming very easy. Anyone in the world can basically make an app and then, you know, put it on the App Store. So the whole distribution concept just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah,
I thought that was really exciting, and many others did, and that's why we have such a plethora of apps on the App Store, because it's the entry barriers to publishing an app are so low right now.
Yeah, so that's the thing I don't understand. There are so many app game companies out mm-hmm, there mm-hmm. developing, you know, both shitty games and, mm-hmm. and cool games, mm-hmm. but some take off, others don't. Mm-hmm. So why go in a software app company where mm-hmm. it's so difficult to get the traction needed?
Well, I guess that the part of the reason I did this was I was a bit naive as well. I just thought that our first title. So when we started, we didn't really know what to do, but I managed to convince some software engineers to join my company. And the first title we did actually was a very ambitious one. It was a game for children called The Moogies.
Yeah.
And we actually put a lot of effort into that. And I was absolutely convinced that it would be a runaway hit. And I still think that we put more effort into that game than most app developers do for a game for that target market. And we spent about a year developing that game. And during that year, we had lots of ups and downs. I mean, I didn't have any money. We were bootstrapping this completely. We didn't have any investors. I didn't pay myself any salaries for a very long time. But I was so convinced. And also, I convinced a lot of people to join the company with the promise of a share of the revenues once they would start hitting. And this is a very old trick for entrepreneurs, is to sell the idea so well that the people that will work for you will be okay with, you know, getting a share of future revenue because they believe in the product. And this was absolutely the case with the Moogies. And then we launched it in November 2011. And it was like probably one of my biggest anticlimaxes ever. Because, I mean, I'd never been to San Francisco. I didn't know anyone at Apple. I just thought that it was enough to have a quality product. Turns out it isn't, because the noise is just so high there. There are thousands of new apps coming on the App Store every day.
Yeah.
And for apps to really become popular, they need to have certain components that I didn't know about at that point in time. So when we launched the game, I still remember that moment. After the weekend, when I was getting like the digital download numbers, and I was thinking that I was hoping that we would have sold at least 100,000 copies during our opening weekend of the Mookies. And I was thinking to myself before I looked at the numbers, like, yeah, maybe, you know, 50,000 is going to be okay. I'm going to be disappointed, but, you know, it's going to be fine. And then when I saw the numbers, and I think the first weekend we sold like 1,200.
Oh, wow.
Like units. It was wow. This was so way, way below my expectations that I remember I was staring at the computer screen. I just got this cold sweat because I instantly knew that I was like super deep in debt. And I knew, okay, this is never going to pay off. We're never going to even reach close to break even on this one. So that was a very uncomfortable feeling, I must admit.
Yeah, I'll bet, you know, it probably felt like a punch to the stomach.
Absolutely. But, and especially because, like, we'd been, you know, we'd been quite prolific in Iceland. You know, I'd done some major TV interviews just before the launch. There had been some news coverage of this new great, you know, Icelandic app that was going to conquer the world. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, my friends, my family, you know, my greater, you know, my network knew about this.
Yeah.
So as soon as we launched the game and the first week was over, everyone was like, hey, how's it going? You know, and this was just a very uncomfortable time for me personally, because, you know, you kind of have to put on a brave face and say, like, yeah, it's going great, you know, but deep inside I knew, I'm not going to survive next month. You know, that was the harsh reality.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a very hard time, both professionally and personally for me, to be like facing a failure like that. But yeah.
So how did, you know, you spent a year, you start your company.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that you pitched on Startup Weekend,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't get any backers there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For the Moogies.
It wasn't Startup Weekend. It was like, what was it called? It was called the Seed Forum.
Seed Forum.
Yeah.
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 And you didn't get any money there.
No.
And at that time, you didn't take that as some hint, or did you just take that, you know, hey, those are not the right investors.
Mm.
Or maybe I didn't sell well enough.
I don't know. I mean, during that time, this is relatively recently after the big crash in Iceland.
Yeah.
The big financial crash. So investors in general were very risk adverse. So I did try a lot to raise money in Iceland. I'm actually not a big believer of these kind of events where people are pitching. I think that this is mostly happens just on a personal level. But I did. I contacted most of the investors in Iceland, I think, and the angels and all the funds. And in some ways, you know, I'm never pissed about not getting any money there. I know the market now, and I think that they made the right decision.
Yeah.
In not investing in me at that point, because the risk was just huge. You know, we had failed in our first title, and I had some ideas for other titles, but I mean, I'm not sure I would have invested in myself if I would just look at it from a neutral standpoint, because we were just like one of many thousand app developers in the world.
Right.
But maybe the thing that was different in the Icelandic investor environment, and this is something that was, I felt it's also like the same way in Europe, is this stigma about failure. It's like that because we did the title, like we did the Moogies and it failed, I felt that this was a major roadblock for us to get any funding in Iceland. Because the first thing that the investors would ask about is, oh, you did the Moogies, how did it go? And I always started the meetings by kind of excusing that title didn't do that well, but I know why, and my next title will go, you know, will do better.
Right. So you didn't start with, you know, it was awesome, it failed, and this is what I learned.
Well, yeah, I did. But what I felt in the Icelandic kind of mentality, that people, you know, they get very prejudiced if someone has a failure on their back.
Yeah.
And I felt that Icelandic investors in general would look at this failure as a very bad thing, like a very big warning sign. And I think that inhibited me to to get a lot of funding in Iceland. Whereas, and we'll get to that later, if you go to the US, they have a totally different attitude when it comes to failure.
Yeah.
They almost don't want to back up. An investor doesn't want to invest in a company or an entrepreneur that hasn't had previous failures, because they look at failures as being a part of a journey, because you learn so much from failing. That's like the biggest part of your learning experience. So I did feel a very big difference in mentality when it comes to investors thinking of failure. So
yeah.
That's one takeaway from the Icelandic market. And that's something that I would love to change in the Icelandic investors' landscape.
Okay. So now I have a goal mm-hmm. for myself to mm-hmm. educate investors more.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I've been trying to do that.
So in this failure point, you've spent all your money. You've gotten incredible loans, bootstrapping, mm-hmm. and like getting people on board to create the Moogies.
Mm-hmm.
For a whole year, I'll bet that you were working about 20 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
and your family probably almost never saw you.
Mm-hmm. This is not the bootstrapping life isn't an easy one.
Yeah,
it isn't.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Yeah, I mean, it was hard, you know, and especially the whole, the whole not having any other life part was kind of difficult. But, you know, when you're very passionate about something, that's absolutely fine. You know, this was my life.
Right.
And the highs and the lows, you know, when I did some new scene in the Moogies that I really liked, you know, and I went about and showed people it. That was like, you know, you get such great satisfaction when you see something that's well done.
Yeah.
And that's probably the thing that I regret still, is that I think the Moogies was a well done piece of software, but we just didn't have a clue on how to promote it or how to get exposure or traction in the US market.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, this just made the anticlimax of not having anyone play the game, you know, even more.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I was absolutely at a really low point but it was about in January, February, after we launched the game. I had to let everyone of my employees go. I hadn't had any salaries for months. I had just recently, you know, split up with my girlfriend, who I have two kids with. And I was just like, it's like the pitch blackness of the Icelandic winter. It was a really low point for me.
Yeah.
And I was so unbelievably close to just quitting. Yeah. And I even got to the point, I remember in February, this February 2012, not that long ago, is that I was like searching the ads employment ads in the paper, and I even applied for like one or two jobs just to see if I would get it. So yeah, this was a turning point for me, absolutely.
Yeah. So but from there, you have to let every employee go.
Mm.
You lose your family essentially.
Mm.
And
you
break up. I don't know mm-hmm. what the reason is, mm-hmm. but my guess is that one of the reasons mm-hmm. was work.
Mm-hmm.
And your game fails
mm-hmm.
and your company seems to be just crashing into the ground.
It was bankrupt, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And you're looking at the ads for new jobs
mm-hmm.
and you somehow muster up the courage
mm-hmm.
to just say, fuck it,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to Silicon Valley
mm-hmm.
and get some investors.
Mm-hmm.
So what gave you, what kicked you in the ass to get you there?
It's a very good question. First of all, sometimes when, you know, when you're really troubled and you feel like you painted yourself in the corner, that's probably one of the most creative times that people can get. You know, if you get too comfortable, if everything is going well, it sometimes limits your creativity and thinking out of the box. And it just kind of happened that I got the idea of QuizUp. And during, it was just, I don't even remember exactly when it was. I was just, what can I do? What possible, you know, how, what can I take? What learnings can I take from my previous failure? And what can I do to create an app that isn't going to be a failure? And I drew up QuizUp, and I actually drew it up quite accurately. Okay. And I still have my like back of a,
back of a napkin.
Your napkin.
Oh, that's thing. And this so
is
cool. QuizUp,
you know, and this is done in February 2012. And I pretty much nail it with this napkin there. And I was just writing this for myself, you know, thinking, and I didn't have a name QuizUp at that point, but yeah. I thought about this platform where we could create like a social network that's all about competing against other people in real time about things that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
And nothing like this existed, nothing like even close to this. And I just thought, this can't fail. Well, of course, it can't fail. I'm not going to make that mistake again. But I got super passionate about the concept.
Right.
And with that in mind, I'd already gone around with Icelandic investors, and I knew that I wasn't going to get any funding because I'd done this, I had failed before. And I just thought like, hey, you know, I need to go where the money is, where the market is, where Apple is, where Google is. I need to really make this happen. And I only have like one chance to do this. So, you know, I'd never been to San Francisco in my life before. So we kind of just, you know, I hired an engineer, one that had been with me before, and one that just, you know, knew that was a good iPhone engineer that was just, you know, was looking for work. So I convinced him to, I sold him this idea and said, guys, do you want to come with me to San Francisco for 3 months? You're going to create a prototype of this product. I'm going to get funding. It's going to be a piece of cake. and that's exactly what we did. So okay. We just, you know.
But it wasn't a piece of cake, was it?
No, it wasn't at all. Probably if I had known beforehand how hard it is to get funding in San Francisco, I'm not sure I would have gone. And this is a prime example of that sometimes overanalyzing or over-researching is a bad thing because it makes you stop doing the silly things that you might do.
Right.
So we kind of use this mantra in Plain Vanilla and QuizUp, and we still use this. And it's the simple sentence of why not?
Yeah.
You know, I had basically nothing to lose. I had like millions of kroners in debt. I was going to be declared bankrupt if I didn't do anything. And if I would just get a job, it would take me such a long time to pay off these debts. And I wasn't looking forward to a nice life somehow.
Yeah.
So I just said like, yeah. Like you eloquently put it, fuck it. Let's just give this one last chance and go to San Francisco. Let's show this to real investors that know the market and let's see what happens.
Right.
And then we just, you know, booked a one-way ticket to San Francisco, me and two programmers that are still senior members of Plain Vanilla.
Cool. I mean, that's really amazing.
It's a fairy tale story, you know.
Yeah, definitely. But that's you know, that's what separates successful entrepreneurs from failing entrepreneurs who get into the low and and just give up versus the ones that, you know, are as you put it, painted to the corner of
Well, I mean, it's funny, like in retrospect, I think that's right. I think that every entrepreneur needs to get through a low point and it needs to conquer it.
Yeah.
And he needs to somehow, you know, be bold. And I often use this phrase because there's a lot of luck involved anyway. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to, you know, be that cocky to attribute all the success of QuizUp just to my brilliance or the people that I work with. Of course, that's a big part of it, but there's always going to be luck involved in all business endeavors. But, I have this like, you know, sentence that I really like, and it's a sentence, fortune favors the bold.
Right, right.
So that, you know, you're not going to get lucky if you're not trying, if you're not bold enough to try.
Yeah.
So, I mean, most people that have not had any success, they will look at successful businesses and say like, oh, they were lucky because they were at the right time or in the right fit, and you know, I could have done that if I was so unlucky with my thing because it didn't work out because, and they look at all these external factors, and that's fine, but the thing is that if you're not bold, you're not gonna get lucky.
Yeah,
you know, and this is something I really believe in. So it's always a combination of being bold and you know, having the guts to do something. And to some extent, flying to San Francisco at this point was considered by many a fool's errand. You know, yeah. I got so many skeptics when I was doing this. Like, what are you doing? Like, really, you know, you don't know anyone there. It's all about the network, and it's all about, you know, there are thousands of entrepreneurs going to San Francisco. Everyone is trying to get funding. But I was just, you know, I really believed in the idea.
Yeah, and of course, it also boils down to your network. And I heard that you kind of snuck your way into Sequoia Capital.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, I didn't really know anyone when I was there, but networks are quick to be built, you know. And this was what I was doing. I mean, my guys were creating a prototype, but I spent my whole day just trying to get meetings and networking.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was there, I kind of looked at it like it was like a computer game. So I started level one with no experience points.
Yeah.
And then you try to like get appointments or get meetings. And you can't start at the top. You know, when I started, when I came there the first time, I started sending cold emails to the big Sequoias and the Greylocks and the big VCs. Yeah. And they didn't even answer because there are thousands of people doing that.
Right.
So you have to start like a little bit lower. And then when you like, you get someone in a meeting, you have to think, what's the objective of this meeting? He has to introduce me to someone that's one level above him. So it's like leveling up.
Yeah.
And and I had like this big map in Excel where I was just like looking at all the contacts. I need to get to this one. Who can who can I like go through to level up to become at this level and so forth?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a game. I love that game actually. I think I had the most amazing time ever in San Francisco. And I mean, we had to use so many different tactics to get into meetings, especially to start with.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough that there were some people that initially started me. So David Helgason of Unity, who is an Icelander, he was very helpful. Gunnar Holmstein, who is now working at Play Manila. He had been living there and he was very welcoming as well. But you know, in the end, it was just about working and doing meetings every single day. And that was how it was.
Hustle.
It's about hustle. It's about selling.
Yeah.
And in the end, we raised, you know, about $1.2 million in our seed round, and I think we had like over 20 different angels participating in that round.
Right.
And those are the 20 that said yes, and then we had like 100 that didn't say yes, or 200.
So
the amount of meetings I did there is just, I'm not sure I can ever go through with this again because I was so desperate. You know, I knew when I got there that I had exactly 3 months. Because our tourist visas were just valid for 3 months. And I knew that if it didn't make it, it was over.
Right.
So it's sometimes good to have this really strong incentive to do well, just to know it's all or nothing. And it's just such an incredibly all or nothing trip.
Right.
And, you know, fortunately it was all.
Yeah, yeah. So now you've raised in total about 28 million.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you're really busy guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna cut the interview short with mm-hmm. two additional questions. Mm-hmm. So the first question is, what's the one advice that you would give an entrepreneur that is thinking of going into the mobile app gaming industry?
The one advice.
Yeah. So for instance,
think about your go-to-market strategy. You know, this is probably. I've done a lot of meetings with both aspiring app developers, and there are so many great ideas out there. But the same mistake that I did when I did the Mookies is that even if your app is great, even if you think about how, you know, polished it is and fun, it doesn't matter if people don't know about it.
Right.
So when you go and pitch to any VC, the first thing they're going to ask about is your go-to-market strategy. It's how to get traction. And because that's not always the same thing as having a good quality software. I mean, Flappy Birds wasn't really good quality software.
Yeah.
But they had some magic there that was, you know, that made it viral.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what happened to QuizUp as well. We were able to make QuizUp viral.
Right.
And it's the only real way to...
I tried that game yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
like...
Which one?
A quiz on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I realized after playing a couple of games, I need to stop playing this. Otherwise, I'm going to get so hooked that I won't be productive at all.
Yeah. So, I think that, I mean, we had different go-to-market strategies. I mean, before we launched QuizUp, we did a partnership with Lionsgate Studios, and we did a branded Twilight QuizUp game. And we were able to hang on to their marketing efforts because we were a small company, but we got like a million users just by working with the Twilight film series. It's just like one example. You just don't just create an app and think that it will become viral on its own merits. You have to think very deeply about your go-to-market strategy, how you're going to get exposure, who you're partnering with. This is probably the single most important thing when it comes to pitching an app idea to investors.
Okay, that's really good advice, and I hope the listeners will take something from that. So, how can people... dear listener, I want you to say thank you to Thor. How can people say thanks to you? Twitter, LinkedIn,
Facebook. Yeah. I mean...
email?
I don't know. We've had so many thank you notes. We had one incredible thank you note the other day where we had a girl from Los Angeles writing us to thank us for enabling her to meet the love of her life.
Oh.
So she actually met a guy that's from London. They were playing together Lord of the Rings trivia. And they were both like Lord of the Rings kind of nerds.
Yeah.
And through that common passion, they started playing each other, did some rematch, then started chatting on our platform. Yeah. And now they're engaged. And they're getting married.
Wow. So this is a dating app.
Well,
kind of.
I mean,
it can't be.
I wouldn't say dating, but in our next versions, we have seen the power of how people get connected through QuizUp because of they're playing something that they're passionate about. Because in QuizUp, we've got very niche topics. So if you're playing someone that in a topic that you're very passionate about, you instantly have something in common with that person. So we will emphasize on encouraging people to communicate to each other. Right. So we are creating a platform that allows people to connect to other people through their shared interests. So and that's something that's super exciting for us.
So the future for your company is like networking.
Absolutely.
And connecting.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, Thor, thank you very much. I'm going to in a couple of months, maybe a year, I'm going to do another interview to see how you either, made such a big success or such a huge, devastating crash.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
So, thank you, Thor, very much. Listeners, you can get the show notes and the links to everything we mentioned here on vikingentrepreneurs.com/4. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening, and see ya. Bye.